We've been looking at the book of James under the general topic of how is your faith? And using James as a guideline for the rest of the book actually comes from one of the passages we're going to be looking at tonight. But that James was writing to these ones, that the recipients, and hoping that their faith would be strong enough to get them through issues they would face each and every day. In James chapter, and I've got it on there too. I changed that. No, it's James chapter 1, I'm sorry. James chapter 1. I'm way ahead. Verses 22 through 25. I'm reading from the New American Standard Bible here, but prove yourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For once he has looked at himself and gone away, he has immediately forgotten what kind of person he was. But one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides in it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man shall be blessed in what he does. And so, these particular verses challenge us to be hearers of the word and doers of the word. And I hope that we recognize, of course, that one cannot successfully do what needs to be done unless he first understands what and how to do what is necessary. And therefore, hearing precedes doing, but we hasten to add that doing follows hearing and is necessarily expected to transpire. So how is your faith when it comes to being a doer of the word? Now really this is similar to some other things that we find in the scriptures. For example, in John chapter 14 verse 15, Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." And in 1 John chapter 5, verse 3, this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. So there's the love of God, or love of Jesus, and the manifestation of that, or the doing of that, if you will, is keeping the commandments. And so this is kind of the same thing. Hearing and doing, they go together. When you hear the word, it's not just to hear it for the mere case of learning something. Of course, you learn something. That's the goal behind it. But it's also to produce faith, and then that faith is put into practice. One becomes a doer of the word. And I really, as I've said several times, I think that this is just a major point in the book of James. The New American Standard Bible's reading, I think, is kind of intriguing here in verse 22, where it says, "Prove yourselves doers of the word." So in other words, the challenge here is for you to prove that you are a hearer. And you prove that you are a hearer by being a doer of what you have heard. That's how it works. Now James returns to this basic idea over in chapter 2, verses 14 through 26, when he talks about faith and works. Well, show me your faith by your works. In other words, you know, you'd be a doer. And also, your works proves that you have faith. So you can see the interworking of the two in those passages. But faith, as we understand, is something that is the basis. Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the Word of God. There's where the hearing is. The hearer is to hear the Word of God. And also, faith is something that's vital. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, without faith it's impossible to please God. So we can understand that quite well. And then also, when we throw into the mix here some of the things in James chapter 2. Now we'll just look at a few. We're not going to look at everything, but just a few. How about James chapter 2, verses 17 and 18? "Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead, being by itself." You could say there that a hearer without the doer is dead, being, you know, just not carried out. Verse 18, "But someone may well say, 'You have faith, I have works. Show me your faith without the works, and I will show you my faith by my works.' You drop down here to verse 24. You see that a man is justified by works, not by faith only. Well, that's a person who's a doer. And then verse 26, just as the body without the spirit is dead, so also faith without works is dead. Hearing without doing, well, again, the idea, there's no life involved there whatsoever. And when you think about all this and consider what's being said and where the challenge is, every issue by James in this epistle, whatever they are, the ones that we've looked at, the ones that we've looked at, they can all be successfully met and mastered by being a doer, and a doer of what has been heard. So one must now first be a hearer, and then we must be a doer. Now, he mentioned something, and it depends on translation. It's either deceiving or being deluded. It's also the deception and the delusion. Let's think about that for just a moment. Now, this is not on the part of others. It's not that others have done this or others are guilty of this. That's not it. Or it's not caused by others. A little bit more that same idea. But it is also not a problem of what might be referred to as ignorance. And not in the colloquial or slang way, but just not knowing. Well, that's not it either. That's not where the delusion is at. Actually, when you read the passage, you find out it's a problem of execution. A problem of doing. And so you look at this, and you see, if a doer of the word, not mere hearers only, it's the hearer only, the one who is deceived or deluded. And they would be deceiving or deluding themselves. Also, now, it may be that what contributes to this is thinking that only being a hearer is enough. Or it could be thinking that, well, I have done my duty. Now, I know sometimes we think to ourselves, well, what could be wrong with that? Well, there's a parable that Jesus had of the servants in the household. And they come up and they finally say, well, be merciful to me. I have done that which is my duty to do. And they had done their duty to do, but they didn't do any more than that. And here's the other thing. They were not going to do any more than that. And I think about that, and I've always, been kind of curious about that, because a lot of times, we think if we do our duty, that'll be okay. But actually, we're called to do perhaps a little more and extend ourselves. Jesus talks about if someone compels you to go 1 mile, you go 2. You extend yourself a little bit. You put out a little more. It's not just a matter of, well, I'm just doing my duty. No, we extend ourselves on that, and we do, all the things that are necessary, wherever the case might be, or else we find out, well, then we're just trying to just get by with the bare minimum. Now, also, it's not a matter of imagining that our lesser results are satisfactory. We may do something, and there may be results, and the results may be positive, but we realize it's not really what it ought to be. It could be better. I could have done better, or perhaps it looks like there's more that's expected than this. But now I've done what I think I could possibly do, and then just thinking, that's all that's necessary, and not going to work on it, not going to try to increase, not going to try to improve, and just think that the lesser results are satisfactory. Now, they may be, but remaining like that, well, that's just not... That's not the thing at all. And you get into this, and I look at this, and I think what it talks about with the mirror that comes up next and other things like that. When we were living in Arkansas, there was a young lady there. She's in her 30s. And she was handicapped at birth. I don't know exactly what contributed to that, but... She was physically, mentally challenged. And when she was, maybe in her teens, something along that line, maybe a little earlier than that,
she got spinal meningitis, and that just exacerbated the condition that she already had. And her name was Lily Shannon. And Lily was a girl that was happy to see you, and she would jabber away, a lot of which you could not understand. Sometimes you could, sometimes you couldn't. And she had this little pocket mirror with a rubber border around it. And she would carry that, and she would hold it up and point at it, and she would say, "Lily Shannon, Lily Shannon, Lily Shannon." And she'd hand it to you. Just did that to everybody. Now, when she did it to me, I always took it and I looked at it and I said, "I don't know, Lily." I said, "What I see in here is something just terrible." And she'd laugh about it. And I'd hand it back to her and she'd point at it and she'd say, "Lily Shannon, Lily Shannon." You know, here's someone we might think is not quite as well off as other individuals, but she knew exactly what she looked like. Yeah, she had that one right. And too many times, you know, we don't know what we look like. And so she kind of had an advantage there. And we'll see how this plays in now as we go along and consider what's in verses 23 and 24 by way of the contrast that you find there. There's the forgetful hearer you find in verses 23 and 24 as compared to the scrupulous hearer in verse 25. The forgetful hearer sees himself accurately. Now, that's not the problem. Sees himself accurately. But then, here's what happens. He selectively remembers. Perhaps someone is like someone who looks in the mirror and sees that his face is dirty and then convinces himself after he turns away, "Well, I'm not dirty. I'm not that. It's not that bad." I'm so on. Or someone may look in there and they see some imperfection. I don't know, a scar, a mark, whatever the case might be, or the hair's a certain way, and turns away. "Oh, no, it's not all that bad. I didn't see that." And so on. It could be something like that, selectively remembering one's appearance. In other words, you see what you want to see. We understand that can work in a lot of different ways. So then when we think about this forgetful hearer, someone who could look in a mirror and turn away and it has forgotten what... Well, you know, how is your faith when it comes to self-examination? 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5. "Examine yourselves to see if you're in the faith." Examine. It's not the goal of other people to do this for you. We're supposed to examine ourselves. And I'll tell you what, that sometimes is tough. I think one of the toughest things, one of the hardest things, and one of the more frustrating things that I do is trying to proofread my own work. I just don't see the mistakes. I've gone through it, and I go back and look over it. I can't find those things, and if I can't find them, they remain there. And there's been times when this has been, you know, kind of hilarious. I had an article one time, and I was using Galileo as an example. Galileo was under house arrest for, I think it was 7 years. And I just bollocks that up, and I didn't have Galileo under house arrest for 7 years. I had him under the house for 7 years. Boy, there's a big difference in that. And, you know, that was just funny the way it turned out. But there were others. I mean, I've done one or two others. I mean, it was just embarrassing how that came out. You can imagine. And it gets right through the spell checker now. Because it's not really checking that much for grammar. Only on a superficial level. So it's hard to do that. To proofread your own work. And it's hard sometimes for us to see our own mistakes. So I think we can associate with this idea of being a forgetful hearer. Yeah, we can examine ourselves. You know what? We don't see it. We may not see ourselves exactly as God sees us, but God does see us. And He doesn't make any mistakes about this. He knows exactly what we look like. So maybe we need to be a little more serious about this and do it perhaps a little bit more often and be just a little more honest about it. We may need to be that person who is the scrupulous hearer. Now that's the person who looks intently I notice that. Looks intently into the perfect law. So that's really what they're talking about here. Not just looking in a mirror, that's an example, but looking into the perfect law. Now, looks intently, you know, I looked that up because I wanted to see if that's really brought out in the original word. And I found out that it means, literally, someone who stoops down for a closer look. We have all done that, haven't we? We got a new refrigerator, and when I was sweeping up where the refrigerator had been, and you know, you're always surprised by how much, look at all that underneath that refrigerator. And I was sweeping all that up, and I got it over here at the side, and I was getting the dustpan, getting ready to go, and I was scraping that up in one thing and another. And then later on, a couple days after this, I'm walking out there, and there's a little bit that I'd missed. Big surprise there. And I looked down there, and I thought there was a coin lying there. And you know what I did? What would anybody do if you thought it was a coin? You do this. See if there's a coin there. You get down for a closer look. Whenever Peter and John were running to the tomb of Jesus, it just seemed like they were racing to see who could get there first. I get that impression. And John, probably quite a bit younger than Peter at this time, got there first. And when he got up to the tomb, you know what he did? Hit the brakes, stopped. There the tomb is, and it's open. What did he do? It says that he stooped down and looked in, right? Same thing. Closer look. So, this scrupulous here is someone who's taking a closer look at the law of liberty. And would also be one who would take a closer look at himself as well. And someone who's like this is someone who's eager to have a more accurate understanding. How about those over there at Bereans in Acts chapter 17, verse 11? We know about them and how it says they examined the Scriptures to make sure that what they were hearing was so. They didn't take anybody's word for it. They did that stooping down, looking into it. They got a closer look, and they got a more extensive look at this. They wanted to make sure that it was correct. And while we're on this line here, go back to the Old Testament book of Nehemiah. I've always liked Nehemiah chapter 8. Now, prior to this, in chapter 7, where you got all those names and everything over there, I'd hate to get a reading and someone say, read Nehemiah chapter 7 for us this morning. My goodness, I just say something like, well, all those guys over there. But Nehemiah chapter 8, Nehemiah's day, the teachers were diligently seeking to get it right. So it would be capable of being understood. Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 8. They read from the book, from the law of God. Now watch. Translating to give the sense so that they understood the reading. Now not that the people that were reading understood the reading, but the ones who were hearing understood the reading. So they were careful about this. They were scrupulous about this. And then you get down here to verse 12. And the people went away to eat, to drink, to send portions, to celebrate a great feast, because they understood the words which had been made known to them. So you see the success of this. You take care, you make sure this is right, and then they were able to do the things that were necessary to do. So there were those that were prepared, and they were scrupulous, and the ones that were hearing, they were scrupulous. All of this thing, you know, to get it right. And the hearers, did they bear any responsibility to then do what they had heard? Well, you pick up in verse 13 that's exactly what took place. The second day, the head of the father's households of all the people, the priests, the Levites, were gathered to Ezra the scribe that they might gain insight into the words of the law. And they found written in the law how the Lord had commanded through Moses that the sons of Israel should live in booths during the feast of the seventh month.
So they proclaimed and circulated a proclamation in all their cities and Jerusalem, saying, go out to the hills and bring olive branches and wild olive branches, myrtle branches, palm branches, branches of other leafy trees, to make booths as it is written. So the people went out and brought them and made booths for themselves, each on his roof and in their courts and in the courts of the house of God, in the square at the water gate and in the square at the gate of Ephraim. And the entire assembly of those who had returned from the captivity made booths and lived in them. The sons of Israel, watch, had indeed not done so from the days of Joshua the son of Nun to that day. But they were doing it now. And why were they doing it now? Because they'd heard about it. And they were doing the word. And there was great rejoicing that they found this. And well, it hasn't been done. Look how long this hasn't been done. But it's something that ought to be done. And we're going to do what ought to be done. That's being a hearer and a doer. So what was going on here? Well, you know, they're doing kind of like we ought to do. You might hold your place there for just a minute, Nehemiah. But in Romans chapter 2 is something I think that may help us along this line. Romans chapter 2 and verse 13, for not the hearers of the law are just before God. And all those folks back there had heard the law. But the doers of the law will be justified. So he had to be a hearer and a doer back in the Old Testament. How about that? And that's what those folks in Nehemiah's day were doing. But it's not just them. We would understand that this is in here for an example. That there are those who ought to be doing the law as well. And in just a short order here, you find out that when Paul begins to discuss things that the Jews were not doing, in which they were sinning, some of the things he had to say when you get over into chapter 2, and like verse 21, you therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that one should not steal, do you steal? You're teaching it. Are you doing what you're teaching? Well, you're teaching what you've heard and what you've learned. Are you doing it? And so that should give us, you know, an opportunity for some reflection on this. Now, James talks about continuing or abiding in the Word. And this is what they were doing. You go back to Nehemiah chapter 18. Ezra read from the book of the law of God daily, from the first day to the last. And they celebrated the feast 7 days, and on the eighth day there was a solemn assembly according to the ordinance. So it wasn't that they were just caught up in the moment and they did this and then later on, well, it just all kind of fell by the wayside. No, they were continuing. They were abiding in being a doer there. And Israel did this. And we're supposed to do the same thing. Jesus said in the giving of the Great Commission, you teach them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. Now you're going to teach these things and make disciples. They're going to hear this. They're going to be baptized. They're going to become followers of mine, and then you continue with them, and you teach them to observe all things. You teach them to become doers. See, that's what he's saying there. So we can see all of this, and we can see the explanation that comes out of James, and we can see that this wasn't just a one-time thing. This was something that's done on a number of occasions. Now, and again, here's another question. Are we allowing our faith to produce a doer of the word? In other words, you know, it's something that's personal here. Now, in the application here, we're not supposed to be careless, but we ought to be effective as a doer of the word. Back to James, and if you notice there, in verse 25. James chapter 1, verse 25. That one who does this, who the scrupulous hearer, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, that man is blessed in his deeds. That's what it says there in it. When I read that, I'll tell you what I always think of. I always think of the end of the Sermon on the Mount. You know the case where you got the two different builders?
You got the wise man who's a builder. You got the foolish man who's a builder. In both cases, it says that they heard the word. Now, the wise man heard the word, and he did it. And that's like building your house on a rock. And you know the rest of it. Here comes the storms of life and the water and everything, and the house stands firm. But the foolish man, he hears the word too. But he does not do that. And that's like building your house on the sand. And then whenever the issues of life and the storms of life come along, well, it doesn't stand. It falls down. I think about that. And I think that really is something also that talks about the importance of being a hearer and a doer and the serious matter of just remaining as a hearer, not being a doer. And by the way of just having a little simple test here, if you look at Matthew chapter 22, Matthew chapter 22, and we're going to look at something I think that's very familiar to us now. Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 through 39. The question was asked of Jesus, which is the great commandment in law. And he said to them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. And a second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Now, this is the hearing of the word. What you have here, we've read it, you've heard it, there it is. Now, what do we do with this? And it's kind of interesting when you look at this. The first part of this has to do with love toward God, and you'll do this, and it goes to the extent of how you do it. So this is love that kind of goes vertically, you know. It's love that's, and it's directed up towards God. That's, you know, your relationship between you and God. And you hear these things, and now are you doing it? But the other part of this, the second part, is how you love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that's down here on this level. That's horizontal with others. And so we should realize here that when this is said, it's expected to be done. Not just toward God only, but also toward others as well. And it's both of these. So are we hearers of this? And I've got to tell you now, it'd be relatively easy to be a hearer of this. That's really not the hard part of it. So we're hearers of this, and we acknowledge we hear this, and we understand, well, yeah, that's love toward God, heart, soul, and mind. Shows the extent of it. And then also the extent of loving your neighbor is you love your neighbor as yourself. So are we hearers of this? Huh? Well, are we doers on this? And that may be kind of a different story. Well, no, we're not really loving God. You know, we kind of become that forgetful here. I know that's what I'm supposed to do, but I'm not doing it. Well, whatever it is that keeps you from doing it, stop that and start being a doer. Same way with your neighbor, because you've got to remember, you know, it takes both being a hearer and a doer in order for these things to be successful. Now, by the way of conclusion, it's just a simple exhortation that we need to be a hearer and a doer. Take your songbooks, turn to the songs been selected. A lot of times, there are people that are hearers of the word. And they might go on like that for quite some time. In West Virginia, we had a man there that was, he would come with his wife, and, he would sit there, and he was a good man. He treated his wife well, and his good worker, everything, you know, that you expect someone to be, and he met all those things, a good man. You certainly would call him that. But he wasn't a Christian. But he came a lot to the services. Sometimes he might even come when she wasn't there. And we had a gospel meeting, and during the gospel meeting, the preacher said something about the idea that a spouse wanting the mate to obey the gospel because, first of all, they love that mate so much. And they want that, they love that mate so much that they want that person to be a Christian and to go to heaven. That's how great the love is for a mate.
And after that, I guess that really worked on him. I'd seen him sometimes. He'd have a hold of that pew in front of him so hard. I thought if he takes his fingers away, there's going to be marks in that pew that's going to last for months, you know. Fighting it. He was hearing this. He knew what to do, and he's just fighting it. And so his wife, Marlene, came in one day, and he was working this particular Sunday. He had to work like one a month. And she said, the sermon that we heard last week, he said, that's really had an effect on Gary. She said, you know, I think he's really close to where he might obey the gospel. And I told her, I said, well, that would be great. I said, I'll go out and talk to him. I said, there's all kinds of people that are members of the church, but a man that's just as good a man as Gary, it's just a shame that he's not a Christian. And I meant that. I meant lots of people like that. So they invited us out for I can't remember whether it was a meal or just, you know, some refreshments or something like that. We went out there with the kids. They had a new house, and they cleared off the back side of it out there. And he was a big hunter. He liked to hunt turkey and deer, that kind of thing. And we were talking about it. I was asking about seeing any turkey out there and deer. And he said, yeah, you know, just conversation. Big brush piles out there and so on. So we're making this conversation. I was thinking to myself about starting to steer this around towards matters about salvation and his soul. And he just turned around, looked at me, and said, would you baptize me tonight? Sure. And he said, I've listened and listened and listened. And he said, I know what to do, and I haven't done it. And I'm going to do it tonight. I said, great. Now, I'm using this to point out that sometimes people are hearers. And they do what they need to do. They become doers. Now, with him, it was him becoming a Christian. And sometimes we're hearers, and we become better Christians. And the kind of Christian that we ought to be by becoming a doer. And these are all things that we need to consider. And if you're subject to the invitation in any way, and we can help you, you believe in Jesus Christ, Son of God, you repent of your sins, you be baptized tonight, and if there's change that needs to be made to become a better doer, and you need the prayers of the saints in that direction, we'd be happy to assist you. If you're subject, why don't you come all together, we stand and sing.